Light beer, dark money. Agree on something. Politics, culture, and the intersection of faith, freedom, and free enterprise. And now, live from the Star Worldwide Network studios, here are your hosts, Light Beer Chris Clements and Dark Money Sean Noble.
Welcome back to another episode of Light Beer Dark Money. I'm Sean Noble.
I'm Chris Clements.
And it is debt ceiling
time. It is debt ceiling Thursday.
So last
here
night
in America.
Yeah, last night the House passed the bill that was negotiated between McCarthy and Biden.
And announced over the weekend.
Yeah.
A miracle happened. They followed their own rules and allowed 72 hours for everyone to read it. And then a lot of people were very, very upset.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Which
we have some very unhappy conservatives. We have some very unhappy progressives.
Yeah. So what does that mean when the very, very unhappy conservatives and the equally fuming progressives fuming about the same things that one didn't get, like something like work requirements for Medicare. We didn't get those. Okay. Or Medicaid. It was for Medicaid. But we got some work requirements.
Yeah. Because the left is saying that we're going to take.
And they're upset about the work requirements completely.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the way I look at this is we won. The Republicans won. This debate, because Biden, up until a week ago or 10 days ago, was saying, I'm not negotiating. They need to send me a clean bill, clean debt ceiling, no spending cuts. And the House passed a bill that was pretty strong. And that served as the starting point for negotiations. And what ended up happening was a big cut in spending. And it's not as much as we'd all want, of course. But we have a 4-vote majority of one house.
Yeah.
We don't have the Senate and we don't have the presidency. I mean, guys, this is a win. This is a win.
I just am very skeptical, and maybe I'm just a cynic, is that when the far right or conservatives in general, people who claim they're very, very conservative, we had them on the show and they're good friends. And I don't want to second guess their motives, but it begs the question. So the bill that you passed, was that the end all be all? And was that your farthest starting point, or was that where you, because it certainly wasn't where you're going to wind up, and you should know that ahead of time in any negotiation.
Right. Right.
You know, you propose everything in the kitchen sink that you want, knowing full well that it's going to get whittled down. Some things are going to be left out and other things are going to stay in certain levels. And that's precisely what happened.
Right.
On many different levels. And so, to your point, Biden was not going to negotiate. He had held this thing, you know, hostage for 96 days, I think is what I read. You know, over the course of when Kevin McCarthy met with him in February, said, let's get this done now. Kevin McCarthy held his caucus together. They passed a bill which forced Biden's hand. The Senate did absolutely nothing. Nothing.
Nothing.
Chuckie Schumer did nothing. Mitch McConnell did nothing. Nobody did anything. They just waited. And then finally, Biden had to negotiate. And so is this the ultimate what we always wanted? No, of course not. But Kevin McCarthy won.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what he won specifically, because there's a poison pill in this bill that I think is great. And that is, if the 12 appropriations committees in the House can't get their act together over the next 6 months and pass out of committee viable appropriations bills, there's a 1% cut across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for the House and the Senate. And Republicans, even when we had the House, the Senate, the presidency, all talked about regular order. Oh, I can't. We need to get back to regular order, said, you know, Senator Jeff Flake. We need to get back to regular order. I heard it the whole time. They never did.
No.
They spent just as much, if not more. And now because we have divided government, maybe we can come back to regular order. And regular order means, for those, you know, the uninitiated, is that bills go through that oversee all the agencies, go through the Appropriations Committee. There are 12 Appropriations Committees. That is where you design policy procedure for those divisions of government.
Right.
For those agencies, like agriculture, like energy, like education. Unless there's that oversight and you rule by a continuing resolution, they can keep doing whatever they're doing. They have no direction. There's no statutory authority to tell them anything.
Right.
And so my pushback to all the Republicans who are screaming and conservatives are screaming about this bill is, well, now you have the opportunity to do your job. Now you have the opportunity to really go back and do the hard work. Passing a CR, that's easy. You don't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
you know, so that's my take.
And that's a good take. We would want more spending cuts. We'd want all kinds of different things. But again, we are divided government. It's only a 4-seat majority.
Yeah, if you want to force Biden's hand, you know, you should have elected, you know, the red wave should have happened.
Yep.
It didn't.
It didn't. So the, and for the Republican, for the conservatives, and this is something that we have, as conservatives, have had a problem with for a few decades. When we start to fight amongst ourselves, saying, well, this isn't good enough, and then it takes Democrat votes to pass something, well, guess what? Democrats are going to ask for a price. So all of a sudden, what was a good thing, not good enough, just got worse. Yeah. So the latest is that because Democrats had to cross over and vote to pass this, in addition to Republicans, Democrats are saying, hey, well, what do we get? We want our earmarks back. So now that's at risk. I mean, we tend to, well, as I said yesterday to my wife, that this is a classic example of making the perfect the enemy of the good.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. It's not going to be perfect, guys. It's not going to be perfect until we have a supermajority and a Republican president. And
But even when we, it wasn't a supermajority, even when we have the majority, you know, the wall didn't get built. All the different priorities that we said that we would do didn't happen.
Obamacare
didn't
get repealed. Well, not only that, but spending went through the roof.
Spending went through the roof.
And where were the conservatives who were screaming bloody murder right now back then?
They were going along with the president. They were going along
with the president.
Exactly. They were going along with the president and on their own little spending spree.
Yeah.
And the truth is, it's only when we have divided government like this do we get these types of bills. To where there's least some focus on restraint. And Democrats and Republicans intuitively know that they have spent way too much money. They've caused this inflationary crisis that we find ourselves in. And the only way out of it is to put the brakes on it. And the brakes are being put on it. I mean, we're not, the bill does do that. Now, is there, you know, a $4 trillion debt ceiling on top of that? You know, a window of debt that can be accumulated over the next 3 years or 2 years, 2.5 years? Yes, that's correct. However, the Republicans, last time I checked, like I said before, have the appropriations process.
Yeah.
They have the purse strings. So what are they prepared to do?
Right. This is where to put your money where your mouth is. I mean, the other thing I look at, if you just want to go really simplistic, is that if people like AOC and Raul Grijalva are so adamantly against this because of how outrageous these spending cuts are.
It's not really even a cut. It's a slowing
of growth. I mean, and you vote with them? Because we had in our delegation, we had Biggs and Lesko and Crane and Gosar all vote with Grijalva.
Well, and they've all voted together because they can't, remember. And that's the cynic in me. Like they can vote that way, you know, because they're in pretty safe seats. They can rabble rouse all they want.
Oh yeah, yeah. Everyone's in it.
They can rabble rouse all they want and raise money,
right?
And say, well, we're voting out of principle. It's like, well, If you had 30, a majority by 30 members, or 40 members, as some people predicted,
right?
You can vote principal all you want, but you've got four seats.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you don't have the Senate, which you should have had.
Yep.
And you don't have the White House. And so at some point, you can yell and scream and holler all you want, but politics is politics and reality is reality.
One of the things that was a frustrating line is, and Biggs has said this, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it, but I will. Oh, well, more Democrats voted for this bill than Republicans. Well, okay. Then they recognize that they're not going to get anything more.
This is the best you're going to get.
The best they're going to get.
And there's some good things in there for Republicans.
Yeah.
Some really good things in there for Republicans. And so there's even a great thing in there for Joe Manchin.
Right. But keep in mind that fundamentally, the fact that we have anything other than a clean debt ceiling is a win.
Yeah, it's a win.
Because that's where the president was. He was like, I'm insistent on a clean debt ceiling.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't get it. Guess what? He lost. That means we won.
Yeah.
Take the win.
We got him.
Take the win.
We got him to the table. He had to negotiate. And Republicans deserve credit. All of them collectively. They passed a bill.
Yeah, they passed a bill.
I think two people voted against it. Biggs, again, voted against it.
Did he?
But yeah, he did.
Did he really?
He was like the one of the two.
Oh my God.
But they voted against it. But they held together. And that forced the hand. I mean, nobody thought they could do it. Mitch McConnell didn't think they could do it. I mean, he was prepared to pass a clean debt ceiling bill. He said that.
Well, yeah.
You know, if the leader can't pull his team together, then we're looking at a clean debt ceiling bill. He said that. So they did it. Now, again, my question back to them is, what out of that bill that you passed, which was aggressive and was good, there was all good things in there. I agreed with probably 100% of it. What did you think would actually get passed after that?
Yeah,
because in any negotiation, you have a starting point.
That's the opening salvo.
That's the opening salvo. Any negotiation, you have an extreme starting point usually on either side, and somewhere you're going to whittle down. Now, there might be some things that you absolutely will not touch, and both sides, you know, struck that out at the State of the Union. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid was not going to be touched. Well, it can't really be touched in a debt ceiling fight anyway.
Right.
You've got to go after that through regular order.
Well, this and that's another point, is that if you're really going to get spending cuts, that's what the appropriations process
exactly.
is for.
So if you're going to cut the education department, then go after it during the appropriations process.
Right.
If you're going to rein in the energy department or the EPA, do it during the appropriations process. Now you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
Are you going to take it? Because you haven't in the past.
Exactly.
And that's my frustration with the squawking on this. It just seems disingenuous.
Well, it would be so now it's done. It's going to the Senate.
Yep.
The Senate's going to try to.
They're going to muck it up for a couple of days.
Problems. We're on this new deadline of June 5th.
Yeah, where did that come from?
Oh,
it was today. It was June. We're recording this June 1st. It was today. We're going to run out of money.
Janet Yellen was like, "Oh,
life as we know it was going to end."
It's June 5th. It's now June 5th.
I found some money.
Well,
that's the other thing that people don't realize is that tax receipts are coming in, and there's plenty of money coming in.
Well,
we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem.
Yeah, we have a spending problem. So now it goes to the Senate. But the thing that will be interesting to watch is how do the presidential candidates react to this, and where do they come down? Pence put out a statement that sounded like he was against it.
DeSantis came out against it.
Did he?
He did.
So where did Trump come out?
Trump didn't make a statement.
He hasn't made a statement.
Yeah.
Trump, I mean, the amount of spending Trump did, he really is in no position to talk about this, to be honest. But speaking of the presidential, I mean, so this week.
The morning jolt on National Review, the headline, Trump 2024 shaping up to be even dumber than Trump 2020. Yeah. I haven't read the whole article, but
the ongoing food fight between DeSantis and Trump right now is just absurd. But we will have three new entrants into the presidential campaign.
Yes, we will.
This next week.
Yeah.
We're going to have Pence. Well, actually, it's going to be Christie, and then Christie next Tuesday, and then Pence on Thursday, and also on Thursday, the governor of North Dakota.
Which, I heard that this morning, and that flew, like, where did that come from?
Well, I don't know, but apparently he's very wealthy.
So yes, he is. I've met him at an RGA thing. Very nice guy. What's his name?
How wealthy is he? Is he wealthy enough to fund his own campaign?
I think he's got some oil money.
The fracking money?
Yeah.
From North Dakota?
I mean, pretty much everyone up there is, you know, a fracker.
That's a fracker.
Yeah.
Mother fracker.
But you think our fair former governor is going to be part of that Mike Pence announcement?
I don't know. That's a good question.
You know, I texted him yesterday. I didn't get a response.
He's been on his advisory C4 advisory committee.
I would imagine that he's going to be part of that team.
He might be.
Because they are good friends. And I've met Mike Pence. He's actually a great guy. And we've said it on this podcast. He saved the Republic.
Yeah. January 6th, save the Republic. So, but it's now, you know, kind of.
It's busy. There's a lot of people.
And so I had a conversation last week with someone in which I started to think through, you know, a lot of people are saying that the only way that this can really, you know, if you want to stop Trump, it has to be mano a mano, right? But I actually don't know that that's true.
Hmm.
And here's my theory. I think part of the reason that DeSantis and Trump are in such a death match right now. I mean, Trump wants to destroy DeSantis.
Yes.
DeSantis.
Rob DeSantimonious.
But I guess Ron wants to go by DeSantis.
DeSantis.
Not DeSantis.
Not DeSantis.
Okay. No bull.
Yeah.
No bull. No, that doesn't work. Anyway, they pretty much occupy the same lane. I mean, if you are a MAGA-ish, populist-ish conservative, then you are going to like things that both Trump and DeSantis talk about. You know, the anti-woke, you know, that kind of thing. So you clearly have some Trump, like, true loyalists that just love Trump for Trump. But when it comes to the voters that are just, like, generally like, oh, these are issues that matter to me, they're pretty much in the same lane.
Well,
is there much daylight between them?
Well, I think on the woke, on the war against woke, I think DeSantis wins. I think he's shown a pathway through what he's done with the Florida legislature against Disney and against, you know, the education establishment, how to win. I think that's where a lot of people become energized. He's shown how to win on those issues and how to formulate a message to win on those issues.
Okay.
And I don't think Trump really cares about those issues, to be honest with you. So, I think he gives them lip service, but he hasn't. He had the opportunity to probably take leadership on those issues during his administration, and he really didn't. And they were brewing during his administration.
Yeah. So,
I hear what you're saying. I think it's an interesting point, and I think there's a lot of Trump voters who love Trump, who could easily switch to DeSantis for some of those reasons.
On the issues side, right? So, and then you look at someone like Tim Scott, he's got a hopeful message, Reagan-esque, you know.
Great personal story. You know,
he's got a girlfriend. He's got a girlfriend.
He does have a girlfriend.
There was an event yesterday. He was interviewed about it. He has a girlfriend, you know, for good reason. Doesn't want to talk about.
No.
Shine the light on that.
She's probably going to be out on the campaign trail.
Man. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe not. I mean, deserves her privacy. I don't know. Anyway.
Not when you're running for president.
You don't
get privacy.
Yeah. It'll come out. So, but going back to your comment about DeSantis and Disney, So I don't think that's a very good move on his part in a general election sense. Because, look, I have my own thoughts about things that Disney does. But at the end of the day, they produce amazing stuff. And they have what I would say is a lock on a bunch of families, suburban moms, because of the stuff that... And here's an example. We went and saw The Little Mermaid yesterday. Mm-hmm. Absolutely blew my mind.
Really?
It exceeded my expectations.
Were you at the 6 o'clock 3D show? Because that's my kids read that one.
I was at the 4:30. We did not do the 3D. The kids are too young for the 3D. They won't keep the glasses on. But, oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Yeah, you haven't heard a lot of wokeism coming out of this movie. And I think that's the dividing line,
though. But wait, though. But remember when they announced this movie and the Ariel was black. What? You can't have a black Ariel? I mean, it's absurd. We're talking about a fantasy, fictional character.
But actually, Disney did a great job. And actually, I had this discussion with my daughter, Grace, yesterday because she was going to see the movie. She gave me a report on it later. And what she said was her voice was phenomenal. It sounded just like the original. I said, well, that's how Disney, I remember, defended that. I said, no, actually, her voice is the closest thing we have to the original, and that's why she was cast.
Well, I don't know. She was beautiful. She was great. She was a great actress. Amazing voice.
And so it wasn't. They tried to pull everybody away from that question of race and ethnicity, which is ridiculous. And I'm glad you're saying that. Hey, it worked. It was great.
Absolutely. I mean, it was perfectly cast. Melissa. I always forget her name. As
McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy as Ursula. Awesome.
Yeah.
And if that's really her voice in the singing stuff, oh my gosh, she's got some pipes. I'm impressed. The guy who played Prince Eric, the one thing I love about the movie.
I can't believe we're actually talking about this on the podcast.
Absolutely, we're talking about it because it's a major sensation. A major sensation. We're on the cutting edge of culture.
Well, that might be great, but did you see the YouTube video of the man named Nick dressed up as a princess welcoming young little girls into Sleeping Beauty's castle?
No.
At Disneyland.
I did not see that.
Go look it up. So on the one hand, you've got a great movie like this that where they're appealing to just everyday families. On the other hand, they have a dude dressed up as a princess named Nick welcoming people to the castle to dress them up as princesses for their tea time with princesses. That's what's driving people up the wall. So I get what you're saying, and I'm hopeful for Disney. Hopefully Bob Iger can kind of thread that needle between the wokeism and just traditional, you know, Judeo-Christian values, which is what Disney did for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah, I mean, look, so if whatever the latest foray, so every time something happens, it's a good time to check in. So wherever they are, as far as with Little Mermaid, they nailed it.
So, but going back to the original point, you think that DeSantis is, you know...
Well, I think if DeSantis wants...
Their special tax status.
I mean, the games...
Which actually, I'm totally in favor of that. I don't think companies should have special tax status.
And look,
after a certain amount of time, there's tax increase. You know, incremental funding for different projects. I get that. But this was like a 50, 60, 70 year deal.
Right. And if it did, but he framed it as going after them because of their wokeism, and then said some stupid comment about, well, maybe we'll put a state prison next to the
yes,
Disney
exactly.
World. Well, that's, you're losing the bat. You're losing the argument if you start talking like that. My point is that he's walking on some pretty fragile territory when it comes to general election appeal. And maybe he doesn't worry about that right now because he needs to get through the primary, but I think there are bigger fish to fry than Disney when it comes to wokeism.
Yeah, and I think he'll pivot from that. I think, I mean, he's in Iowa right now. He's got to talk about things that matter to people in Iowa.
Yeah.
It's got to matter. He's got to come to Arizona and talk about things that matter in Arizona. But, you know, when he was here last time, I mean, all he did was talk about Florida. It's like, okay, great. Well, do you know anything about what's happening here?
Right. Because I think Arizona did pretty well.
And
probably almost as well as Florida, if not better.
Yeah. So, you know, and going back to another point about your point about Trump, Trump is attacking him on things like COVID.
And trying
to say that Andrew Cuomo did a better job with COVID than Ron DeSantis.
Trump is going to lose this argument.
That's where Trump will lose votes and lose voters. And because once you just start lying about things in that manner, when your base looks at you and says, wait a second, that's not true. There's no truth to that. Well, you know that. We know that. Right. We all know that. What are you saying? And so that's he's going to keep throwing things up against the wall.
So he's been very good at revising history. He's gotten away with a lot of it. But in the context of a primary against a guy like DeSantis, to try to revise history with that audience, not going to work.
Yeah.
Not going to work.
No, we were all there. We all paid attention.
He never fired Fauci.
Yep. You didn't fire Fauci. You locked everybody down. You couldn't give clear answers as to what your policy was going to be. For Trump, the entire COVID debacle, all the lies that were conspiracies that are now true, are going to be something he's going to have to try to defend. I don't think he's going to do a good job with it. He's proven it now.
Yep. Well, we'll be back next week to talk about it more.
Oh my goodness. It's just a smorgasbord of stuff.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah. But I guess go see The Little Mermaid.
Go see The Little Mermaid. Highly recommend.
I personally am going to go see Spider-Man.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
I'm sure. All right.
All right. God bless.
Thanks, guys. Take care.